Ladies and gentlemen, old heads everywhere, we got him. We found Michael Jordan's grandson. We found Kobe Bryant's son. His name is Anthony Edwards. Just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top. Yo, 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 what's going on, everybody? Mike here, Sports and the Real Shit Podcast, coming at you once again. Appreciate you joining me, as always. Don't forget to subscribe and like and share and all that good stuff. Comment on my posts. Follow me on social media. Follow me on Twitter, y'all. My Twitter following needs to come up. Twitter is like the hardest nut to crack because Elon Musk wants you to pay to get your post seen. I have a pretty good following on TikTok, pretty good following on Instagram, terrible following on Twitter or X, because Elon wants you to pay to get your post seen, and I ain't about to pay him. So if you're listening to this, follow your boy on Twitter. Help me get my numbers up. But for real, though, appreciate y'all as always, listening and watching, keeping up with your boy. So got a bit to cover today, so I'm going to jump right into it. First thing, right, it's March Madness. March Madness is always fun, even though, you know, college basketball season is far from what it used to be, at least those of us who grew up watching basketball in the old days, us old heads. College basketball is far different, but it's March Madness. But before I jump into March Madness, I wanted to talk about something that's been floating around for quite a bit now, right? But really came to a head probably a couple weeks ago, I guess. And that is the matter of the NIL, transfer portal, you know, all that stuff that all of a sudden nobody likes. And Nick Saban is like the face of this stuff now because he's, you know, on Capitol Hill, you know, giving his testimony or whatever they call it, right, when he's jabbering and yapping, you know, in front of a bunch of people who didn't care before, but all of a sudden everybody cares now. Not at the students, the athletes, not at the employees are actually getting paid. Everybody wants to hear about it and wants to put it into it. Everybody got problems now. So Nick Saban was out front and center, you know, talking about, you know, NIL on Capitol Hill. So let me play this clip for you guys real quick about what Nick had to say, and then I'll come back and give my thoughts. Listen to Nick Saban.
Now, what we've done between freedom to transfer and creating a free agency system where guys can transfer whenever they want to transfer, and the whole idea that we've created a pay-for-pay-play model in college athletics have created some issues in being able to actually have a program and a system that would enhance those very values that I just talked about. And how does this even impact other sports relative to Title IX, relative to non-revenue sports? And how do we continue to create some kind of a model moving forward where we do improve the quality of life of the student athlete, but create some kind of a balance in terms of competitive balance, which all venues have some guidelines and rules that create some kind of competitive balance, which right now we don't have in college athletics. It's whoever wants to pay the most money, raise the most money, buy the most players is going to have the best opportunity to win.
All right, I'm going to pause it here, y'all. First of all, when you're sitting on a panel with Ted Cruz, I don't mean to get political, but when you're sitting on a panel with Ted Cruz, it's not a good look. I ain't on front, all right? Because this brother is one of the most, the word I was going to use is probably not appropriate, all right? This cat is a clown. I would not want anything to do with Ted Cruz, all right? Not to get political, But it is what it is. This guy is a straight clown. But here's my thoughts on this NIL, transfer portal, all this crap, right? So I talked about this, you know, a couple months ago when Florida State did not make the college football playoffs. And I was like, yo, this thing is rigged. It's all about the money. Money's the root of all evil. And yes, I will restate it again. Money is the root of all evil, or the love of money is the root of all evil. The love of money is what allows the NCAA and all these big dogs to essentially take advantage of these student athletes and make millions and billions of dollars off of them while they get pennies on it. The love of money is what allows you to look past the humanity of these dudes, these basketball players, and these football players who are getting all kinds of nasty season-ending, career-ending, life-threatening injuries, certainly life-altering injuries. The love of money is what allows you to see past that, but to be okay with profiting so much off of these dudes in the name of amateurism and student athletes. These dudes for so long were treated like indentured servants, right? I know people don't like the word slavery, whatever, whatever. So I'll use the word indentured servants. They work essentially for free for 3-4 years, however long they stayed in college. And then, you know, if you made it pro, you made it pro. They didn't care about these dudes. Trust me, I went to Florida State. These football players, nobody really cared about them. If they didn't care about themselves to actually focus on their grades, nobody was going to care about them. And oftentimes, the football schedule, the practice schedule, and all these things, the demands on these dudes, they didn't have the ability to, even if they wanted to, they didn't have the ability to, you know, study and do all these things like all the regular students do. So now that the NIL and transfer portal is out of control, which I agree it is, but now that the students and the athletes are profiting, oh, we have a problem, and now we need a panel. This is similar to, you know, the big tax companies like H&R Block and these boys, you know, lobbying to keep the tax codes complicated so they can keep profiting. The NCAA wants to keep profiting. The big boys want to keep profiting. Yeah, Nick Saban is acting like he's coming in the name of the players. He's coming for the players. You weren't coming for the players, Nick, when you were making big dollars. And don't act like you just started, players just started making money. They just started making money in the open right now. We know Alabama was paying players under the table. You gonna act like they weren't? We know other schools in the SEC and the big time schools in the ACC paid players under the table. NFL players have come out and said that they got paid on their visits. So we know it was happening, but all of a sudden now everybody gets a piece of the pie and you don't have the competitive advantage that you used to anymore, Nick. Now you got a problem with it and you want to come speak on Capitol Hill. Nah, don't give me that, man. I'm not going to buy that one. By the way, I think I've mentioned this on this podcast before. Like, I know someone personally who played for Alabama football. And he was a two-sport star in high school, and he talked about how he wanted to play baseball. He played baseball and football in high school, and he went to Alabama, and he wanted to play baseball, you know, in an off-season or whatever. And Nick Saban essentially told him, if you go play baseball, your spot is going to get taken. He's going to give away his spot. That's what he told me. Two-sport star in high school, Nick Saban essentially told him, if you play baseball, your spot's going to be taken. So forgive me if I'm not in love with Nick Saban. I respect the hell out of him. Great recruiter, great coach. But forgive me if I don't trust everything he's saying. And as a Miami Dolphin fan, I don't trust Nick at all. Because Nick Saban one day tells us that he's not going to Alabama as a Dolphins head coach. He's not thinking about Alabama. He's not going to Alabama. Next day, he's gone. He's at Alabama. Forgive me if I don't trust you, Nick. Forgive me if all of these years you've been cashing checks, millions and millions of dollars, and now you want to come out against the NIL and transfer portal. Meanwhile, coaches have been cashing in for years and accepting jobs and leaving jobs and accepting jobs and leaving jobs for you, and nobody could say anything. The students couldn't do anything about it. So now that the students have a say and could control their own destiny, now it's a major problem. Nah, fam, I'm not going to buy that. I'm not going to buy that. So in my opinion, the coaches like Nick Saban, like they could have gotten ahead of this a long time ago. They should have been gotten ahead of this if it was truly an issue. Nick Saban is probably the most popular, the most respected, the most powerful person in Alabama. Nick Saban's probably the most powerful person in the state of Alabama. Had he come out and said, hey, man, 10, 15 years ago, however long he's been coaching there, if he had come out and said, hey, man, we got to pay these dudes for real, no longer under the table, what would have happened? Something would have had to happen. He was the most powerful man in the state of Alabama, and I would go ahead and say Nick Saban was the most powerful man in the NCAA. So he could have gotten out ahead of this a long time ago. Coach K, these big-time coaches, Coach K, Roy Williams. Like, these guys were the most powerful people in the NCAA, certainly in their states, at a certain point. They could have said something a long time ago to be like, hey, man, let's do right by these students for real. Students. Let's do right by these student athletes for real and pay them. Nah, they kept collecting checks after checks. So now they want to come out and say, well, the NIL is not doing them good. The kids are just coming out and asking for money. How much you going to pay me? And they're transferring as soon as somebody else offers them more. Yeah, that's what happens when you've been hogging the cash for so long. And that's what we're taught, you know, from early ages. Like, when you see a problem, don't sit on it. Try to fix the problem as soon as possible. That's what we're taught from a young age growing up in school. Our parents teach us that. Because the more you harbor the problem, you don't tell your parents when something's wrong, then it becomes a much bigger deal and they can't fix it. So now the cat is out of the bag. So how do you reel it back in? It would have been much easier had the NCAA gotten out in front of it, Nick Saban and all these big head, big time coaches gotten in front of it a long time ago. But they were cashing paychecks. So don't come at us now talking about, oh, well, you know, it's not great for the student. Thank you, Nick. We know it's not the greatest system right now. Stevie Wonder can see it's not the greatest system right now. But it's better than going back to dudes just getting a scholarship and people acting like that's enough payment. These dudes bringing in millions and billions of dollars, man. Nah, they're student athletes. They're amateurs. Get the hell out of here. So nobody believes you, Nick. Should have been gotten out in front of this a long, long time ago, and we probably wouldn't be here. What's funny is that there's this kid, as I'm going through this stuff and reading about, you know, the NIL and, you know, all this stuff. There's this kid, Caden Proctor, who's literally like probably who Nick Saban is talking about when he's talking about kids taking advantage of the system. So if you haven't read up on this kid, Caden Proctor, he's from Iowa. In high school, he commits to Iowa, but he flips to Bama. Nothing wrong with that. Kids do that all the time. He plays 1 year at Bama, enters the portal. He commits to Iowa again. They raise $100,000 for him. He collects the money. He re-enters the portal. And he doesn't have to pay the money back. Kiat. This brother is a businessman. Some may call it fraud. I don't know. That's playing the system. I'm not sitting there advocating for people to do that. But this is what happens when for so long a broken system was left broken and nobody tried to fix it. All types of excuses. Nah, fam, we don't care no more, bro. Now you absolutely have to pay these dudes or it's going to stay broken the way it is because they ain't going back. And the NCAA, to me, like I said before, is one of the most corrupt organizations ever. For so long, they never cared about the student athletes for real. They made some of the most anti-player decisions ever. The Reggie Bush situation. They took away the man's Heisman. Anti-player decisions. Most recently, the Tez Walker situation at North Carolina. He transferred from Kent State. The whole thing was just messed up from toe up from the flow up, as we used to say. Players unable to transfer, you know, all that led to now they're going to transfer as often as they can. They're going to take advantage of the system. So many anti-player, anti-student athlete decisions were made by the NCAA. So now nobody cares, bro. Nobody cares. And now they're in court for everybody's bringing them to court. The earliest court case I remember with the NCAA was the Ed O'Bannon case, you know, with his name, image, and likeness, right? He was on the NCAA video game, the college basketball video game, Ed O'Bannon, mid-90s basketball player, him and his brother Charles O'Bannon, big-time basketball players at UCLA. And Ed O'Bannon was like, man, what? How is my likeness being used in a video game and I'm not getting paid? Ed O'Bannon was like the very first, like he was like the pioneer of suing the NCAA, and he sued the NCAA and the video game maker for NCAA Basketball 09, EA, right? He went to court, he filed a lawsuit because he was like, yo, that's me. You guys are selling me, except that my name ain't there, but it's my likeness, it's me. I'm not stupid. So many lawsuits, right, after O'Bannon. So Ed O'Bannon was like the first one I remember, you know, taking him to court. But so many lawsuits, man, that they've been to court with. I was reading in 2020 and 2021, the NCAA has spent $50 million in legal fees for both years, each $50 million. Because there's people just straight taking them to court now. Because the whole thing has been illegal for so long, and now people are like, nah, we're not going to let you go through. We're not going to let y'all do that to us like that. Because for so long, everybody's been making money except for the kids. Check some of this stuff out, man. In 2022, the NCAA had revenue of $1.3 billion. Now they'll tell you that, you know, they had a negative net income, right? They actually lost money because when the NCAA makes money, they have to give the money out to the schools. $1.3 billion in 2022. By the way, $900 million of that came from March Madness, the men's March Madness. Listen to this stuff, man. Former President Mark Emmert, in 2022, he made $3 million. The vice president, the executive vice president, made $3.6 million. Nick Saban made $11 million his last year. Dabo, $10 million this year. That's his current salary per year. Per year. Coach K made $10 million his last year. Calipari makes $9 million a year. The athletic directors at the big-time schools are making like $1 million on average, like $1 million each. All this money's floating around. And you're going to tell these kids there is not enough money to pay them. How, man? Just say you don't want to pay them. Don't spit in my face and tell me it's raining, bro. You ain't want to pay them. All this money floating around. Look at all this cash these boys are making, man. So for so long, they've hidden behind the fact that they want to call these cats students and student athletes and they're amateurs and we can't pay them. Nah, bro, you don't want to pay them. You want to keep the money for yourself. So now that cats are asking for money for the NIL and how much you're going to pay me before I transfer to your school, now you have a problem. It wasn't a problem when Mark Emmert was making $3 mil a year and the EVP was making $3.6 a year. It wasn't a problem when Saban was making $11 a year. It's not a problem that Dabo's making 10 a year. Nah, it ain't a problem. But now it's a problem that dudes are asking, hey, man, spread the wealth. Let me hold some of that, bro. And football players and basketball players are carrying the NCAA. And especially in the football players' case, these cats, like I said, get hurt. All life, career-altering decisions, man. Most of these cats don't go pro, and they sustain injuries that are they're going to carry for the rest of their lives. But they don't get paid for it. Nothing to show for it. Most of these cats don't go pro, but nothing to show for it. And, of course, you have people, you know, who are carrying the water for the NCAA. You know, that's just people who are jealous, dude. Like, if you watch college sports and you're talking about these cats can't get paid, you're just jealous, all right? You're not looking out for these kids. You're just jealous. So I don't know, man. Like, you can miss me with that. I know I'm going on a rant here, but you could miss me with that. The people who work and bring the money should get paid. Simple as that. I don't know how else to put it. And I'm the only person for so long who had been speaking about it in the mainstream media was Jay Billis. Like, Jay Billis, who's a lawyer, kept hammering at it. Like, he was like, yo, these dudes deserve to get paid. And for so long, nobody else was talking about it. And now that people are starting to make noise, and I'm sure Jay Billis is like, yeah, let's make this happen. Because he's right. He's right. And what people are scared to talk about is it makes some people uncomfortable about this whole NIL transfer portal, all this stuff, right? This whole NIL thing makes people uncomfortable when you talk about the fact that basketball and football players, the men's basketball and football players, actually are the ones who are the revenue-generating sports for the most part. And the demographic that primarily makes up the top basketball and football programs, for so long, you've been telling these dudes as they're growing up, all they heard, for so long, all they heard growing up was, you need to carry yourself, you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That's what they heard for so long. Don't depend on others. Don't depend on the government. And for so long, these cats have heard, you need to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Don't wait for no handouts. That's what they heard. The demographic that now carries the NCAA for so long, nobody wanted to give them a handout. Everybody told them, don't wait for a handout. Pull yourself up by their bootstraps. Now that they're getting ready to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and they're able to do so, cats have a problem, and now they're being told by those who were telling them to pull themselves up by the bootstraps to look out for others who happen to be in a different demographic. The demographic who's more affluent, the demographic who's more preppy, you know, golf players, tennis players, swimmers. Oh, now you're telling this demographic, black people, you're telling this demographic who primarily makes up the revenue-generating sports, don't just pull yourself up by your bootstrap. Share your bootstraps with somebody else. When all their lives, they were told, don't wait for somebody else to give you a handout. Pull yourself up. That's what they've been told. So the NCAA wants these poor kids to sponsor these rich kids. Y'all don't see that? The NCAA is essentially telling these kids from poorer backgrounds, now that you're making some money in the NIL, well, we gotta stop the NIL because we're leaving out these other kids who are rich kids, richer backgrounds. These kids whose parents could probably afford for them to go to college out their own pocket, because if you're going to play golf, your parents got some money. If you play golf growing up, you're probably from the suburbs. If you're a swimmer growing up, you're probably from the suburbs. Your parents got some money. Definitely more than the dudes, you know, growing up in the hood, growing up probably on a farm somewhere in the middle of Nebraska. These dudes growing up with nothing. These dudes growing up in the deep south in communities where all they hear on TV and in the news is the black community ain't this. The black community shouldn't wait for this. They shouldn't wait for handouts. And now that they're getting paid, you want to tell them, nah, slow down. Share your boots with somebody else. I know it makes people uncomfortable, but that's the honest truth. And people are scared to talk about it because of course, race conversation in this country quickly go left anytime you bring up the truth. But it's not lost on me that for so long you've been telling these kids, pull yourself up by the bootstrap, you know, get off of welfare. Your mom's on welfare. Get off of welfare. Don't wait for the government to do anything for you. That's what you've been telling them. The government's not going to help you. Don't wait for the government. And as soon as they start making money, oh, yeah, look out for these guys. We can't let you guys make money. How are the golfers going to make? How are we going to pay the golfers? How are we going to pay the swimmers and the tennis players? Well, pull yourself up by your bootstrap. You should have played a sport that actually generates revenue, huh? Or does it not work like that? Does pull yourself up by your bootstrap only work for certain demographics? Seems like it to me, because all of a sudden, everybody wants to, Nick Saban included in this clip, all of a sudden, everybody wants to look out for the golfers and all these guys. Meanwhile, when Nick Saban was making his cash, he wasn't looking out for golfers. When Mark Emmert, the president, former president of the NCAA, was making his straight cash, he wasn't looking out for the golfers and the tennis players. He ain't care. But you're asking these athletes from poverty, usually, a lot of times, definitely from disadvantaged environments, now that they're starting to get some money to take care of themselves and their family, they're not guaranteed to go pro, so make their money while their body is healthy. You're asking these dudes to take care of the dudes who got it already, whose parents already got it. Nah, y'all ain't slick. We see it. So, yeah, the system ain't working optimally. We get it. It ain't. But don't go on Capitol Hill, Nick. Don't go on Capitol Hill. Like, y'all should have been done something about it. When you were making your $10 million, how much of that did you actually donate to the tennis player, to the golfer, to the swimmer, to the bowler, or whatever teams, other teams they got? Synchronized swimming, I don't know. Hockey. How much of those dollars, Dabo Sweeney, have you donated to these other kids, right, who all of a sudden everybody cares about? Why didn't anybody care about these guys when the NCAA was making $1.3 billion? Mark Emmert was taking home $3 million. How come nobody cared about the tennis players then? Because they don't. So they want to make the black athletes feel bad for not wanting to take care of the white preppy athletes. Yeah, it's uncomfortable, but it's true. Uncomfortable conversation, but it's true. So yeah, it can be fixed. It should be fixed. But I would expect that the players have some representation in figuring out how it gets fixed. The smaller schools, we're going to account for them. HBCUs, we're going to account for them. Title IX, we're going to account for that, right? The ladies, don't want to leave the ladies behind. There's ways to fix it. It's not going to be easy, but there's ways to make it right so that these dudes get paid what they're worth. But spare me your tears, Nick Saban. I don't believe you. You need more people, to quote the philosopher Jay-Z. Anyway, I hate when people take advantage of people, man, and try to act like they care about them. Yeah, I'm going to take all this money, but I really care about you. I'm going to take all your money that you work for, but I really, really care about you. Who stands up for that kind of stuff? Who allows that kind of... What person, honest person, like, would do that? The love of money is the root of all evil. Anyway, March Madness, like I said, is here. I ain't gonna lie, it was tough to watch college basketball this year. Matter of fact, I didn't watch 5 minutes of college basketball this year, all right? But I have started watching college basketball the first weekend of March Madness. It's been okay. I mean, it's a tough watch, okay? I'm not going to lie. College basketball is a tough watch. The rules are too different from the NBA. And because all the one and dones are one and done now, there is no hype about great teams anymore. Like, there is no stacked Duke team. There is no stacked North Carolina team with Vince and Anton Jameson, like, ready to roll through the tournament. Like, those are the major – those used to be upsets. The upsets nowadays aren't really upsets because while these teams, you know, that get upset have high rankings, it's not truly an upset because these guys haven't played together long enough. Like, Kentucky, these guys are all one and done. They don't play together. Like, once they go up against a team that's experienced, that's played together for a couple of years – they're going to get beat. Because while Kentucky may have, you know, guys who are going to go pro and be good in the pros, in the NBA, they don't have any cohesiveness. And you can tell how the style, like, especially when dudes are allowed to play zone against them. You're not going one-on-one. So I'm just going to play a zone and force you to be uncomfortable. And if you don't know how to play with each other, it's like, okay, I'm cohesive, you're not. I've been playing with my teammates 2, 3, 4 years. You guys just met 6 months ago. Who do you think is going to look better on the court, me or you? So really, Kentucky losing is really not that big of an upset like you would think it is, right? Like when a 1 seed or a 2 seed goes down nowadays, it's not the same level of upset as it used to be back in the day when the 1 and 2 seed actually had like juniors and seniors, like they were expected to roll the tournament and then they get upset. Now we're just guys who were just thrown together 5, 6 months ago and they, hey, go hoop, man. Roll the ball out, go hoop. No, my team here who's been together a couple years, we're veterans. We actually know how to play basketball with high IQ and play tough, hard basketball. We're not just looking for the payday in the NBA. We're going to beat you. So, yeah, Kentucky's going to lose to Oakland. It wasn't really an upset. So the basketball is kind of mid because – there's really some bad teams there and some bad basketball. And the teams, the Blue Bloods, who should be have really, really good basketball teams, really don't. They just have really good individual players. And that doesn't always make a great team. So, yeah, I'd rather watch the Joker and Giannis and these guys than college basketball, which is what I did all year until the tournament started. Like, the appeal of the tournament is essentially – the fact that anybody can get knocked out at any time and, you know, buzzer beaters, right? That's the appeal of the tournament. But if you're looking for great basketball, it ain't it. It's just tense because dudes about to go home. They're about to start crying when they lose. Like, that's the appeal of the tournament. It's not great basketball. A lot of it, honestly, if I'm being totally honest, is like watching high school basketball. It really is. And it's not preparing dudes for the next level. Current college basketball ain't preparing dudes for the next level. So you want to go to the NBA. You want to go to compete with his Euros coming over. But you're playing college basketball, which is nothing like the NBA. So if the NBA were serious about using college basketball as a true feeder system, they would work with the NCAA to get rid of some of these rules, man. Change the rule. Like if you're playing zone defense in 2024 in college basketball, get rid of zone defense because nowhere is zone defense played. Change the well, somewhat, but not like this, all right? But change the rules, the shot clock, right? Right now it's 30 seconds. It used to be 35 seconds when we were growing up. Now it's 30 seconds. Put that thing at 24 seconds like the NBA, man. The game is so slow. That's how you would make the game better. Allow the dudes with the talent to show their talent. Right now, they can't show their talent. Because they're stuck swinging the ball from side to side because dudes are playing a 2-3 zone. They can't really, you know, shake anybody because there's four other cats waiting for them. So, yeah, I would say if the NBA wants to help college basketball, change some of these rules, man. The NCAA, like, get rid of the damn zone, all right? Prepare for kids for the next level. You can do a better job of that. Get rid of the damn zone. And go to the shorter shot clock, like the NBA. Because like I said in the previous episode, last two episodes, the Euros are going to eat our lunch because our development process is not preparing these kids for the NBA. Before college or in college. They're not being prepared as they should for the NBA. So yeah, it's a fun tournament to watch because of the possibility of the upset. And you get to watch these kids, you know, who you'll expect to see at the next level. but it's honestly not great basketball. All right, that's just the truth. Like, it's like a LA Fitness run a lot of times, man. I ain't gonna front. Like some of these lower seeded teams, and that's what it used to be, where the lower seeded teams had players who were real sus, right? But then the higher seeded teams used to be teams, like I said, with sophomore, junior, seniors, right? They were veteran teams and great players. Like, you knew they were going pro, but they were also veterans. So they play with high IQ, right? Smart team basketball. So you could watch the 15 seed and see, okay, these guys are sus. But then you watch the 1 and 2 seed, you're like, okay, this is real big boy basketball. These guys are ready for the pros. Nowadays, because of all the 1 and dones, and it's like, the 1 and 2 seeds are not that much different than the 13, 14, 15 seed. The quality of basketball is just not there anymore, man. So that's one of the issues with the current system, whether you call it a transfer portal, NIL, 1 and dones. The current system in college sports and college basketball impacts the quality of college basketball, which is crazy because college football is pretty high level. Like, it's pretty good football. I don't think I really have any complaints about, like, when you're watching big-time SEC football, like, a lot of times it looks like professional football. So college basketball needs to be fixed, in my opinion. Get rid of zone defenses and take the shot clock down from 30 to 24, man. The women's game is actually pretty interesting. The ladies play really fundamental basketball. They share the ball. Like, they cut. Like, the women's college basketball, honestly, might be more interesting than the men's, all right? It really is. They definitely got more star power. So when you're watching LSU and Iowa, South Carolina, they definitely got more buzz around those programs than anything the men's game has to offer. Anything. And it's crazy to say, because the dudes are still the better athletes, but the women, for whatever reason, it's just a better watch right now. So I promise you, like, the women's championship game and the women's Final Four is probably going to have more views than the men's Final Four, because there's just more buzz. Like, Caitlin Clark, had she been on the men's side, she would have left school and went to the pros, right? So that's one of the, you know, challenges of the current system. But yeah, the basketball is not truly great. But my takeaway from this weekend is that Coach Cal is overrated, all right? Coach Calipari is overrated. And I felt this way for so long. I've always thought that Coach Calipari is, like, probably the best recruiter in the sport, but he's really, like, a very average coach. X's and O's wise, like, his teams have been getting kicked out early for a long, long time. And people just now, you know, calling him out on it. But Coach Cal has had NBA players for a long time. Like, NBA is filled with Kentucky players. But Coach Cal has had early exits for a super long time. So in 2010, he lost in the Elite Eight. 2011, he lost in the Final Four. Not bad. 2012, won a championship with Anthony Davis. 2013, they did not make it. 2014, they lost in a national championship game. 2015, they lost in the Final Four. Not bad of a run. Since 2014, here is what Coach Cal and Kentucky have done in the tournament. 2016, lost in the second round. 2017, they lost in the Elite Eight. 2018, they lost in the Sweet 16. 2019, they lost in the Elite Eight. 2022, they lost in the first round. COVID year, so 2020 and 2021 weren't, you know, we're not going to count those. 2022, they lost in the first round. 2023, they lost in the second round. And this year, they lost in the first round. And people are like, yo, they're ready to fire this guy, get rid of him. The problem is, who else you going to get to coach at Kentucky who can continue to bring in those? That's the thing. Like, Kentucky is used to bringing in these one-and-dones, like all these NBA players, these stars. So who are you going to get? So compare Calipari to Tom Izzo, who has the same number of championships, by the way. Tom Izzo has the same number of championships as Coach Calipari. But if you were to, like, pick a coach, you're picking Tom Izzo. Like, I was reading about Tom Izzo. He's won. He has 16 wins as a lesser seed in the tournament, which is an all-time record. Like, Tom Izzo coaches his butt off with lesser players, lesser talent all the time. But Coach Cal, man, great salesman, always selling, always be selling, as they say for sales folks, always be selling. He's always selling, great salesman, great recruiter, mid coach at best. So, yeah, that's my takeaway so far. The games are, it's nice to see some of the upsets, right? And Coach Cal is overrated like a son of a gun. For real. All right. One of the impacts of NIL, transfer portal, and all that stuff is I saw this week that the G League Ignite team that the NCAA sponsors, the NBA sponsors, excuse me, the G League Ignite team that the NBA sponsors is shutting down their operations. And the NBA's reason is that basically what dudes getting paid in the NIL now, why do we need to pay for why do we need to entice dudes to come play for the G League Ignite if they're going to be getting paid in college, which is a legitimate reason. It's a legit reason. Why pay for these dudes to come to the G League Ignite, make $40,000, $50,000 a year, some more? The best players probably make more than that. If they're going to get paid more than that in college, just go to school. Just go to college. So Jalen Green, who was in the G League Ignite, Jonathan Kuminga, and some of the others who are now in the NBA, these guys might as well go to college now if they're going to be getting paid, NIL or elsewhere, right, when they figure out their union with the schools, not teams. So these cats are going to be getting paid now, so there's no point of the G League Ignite. So it's going to be interesting to see how the G League takes form now as more guys actually start going to college now because they're getting paid more with the NIL or actual salaries when it comes to that. How the G League takes shape, because now does it become like a true minor league where teams actually use it to, you know, develop players? Or is it going to be a situation where dudes coming to high school don't want to go to college like they do now? They don't want to go to college and play for free, so they'll go to the G League Ignite or some other G League team. That's going to be interesting to watch. So I think it should be the G League should turn into a true feeder system, a true development program, because so many of these one-and-dones are going to the league. They're not ready to play. Like, all of these guys should be in the G League, man. And until you're ready, you can't come up. That's how baseball does it. So that's going to be interesting to see. So, yeah, I wanted to give my quick thoughts on the G League. Again, the NIL is impacting all these different programs, right? Now that the dudes are getting paid who are making the money, who are bringing in the money, all of these things, right? The Adam Silver, you know, is like, yo, let's get up out of here. Because they're not going to be able to get the play. They're not going to be able to keep up with the NIL and NIL deals and cats getting paid in the NCAA. So they got out. So we'll see what happens with the G League. So real quick, NBA. I'm going to say this, man. Ladies and gentlemen, old heads everywhere, we got them. Old heads everywhere, celebrate, we found them. We found Michael Jordan's grandson. We found Kobe Bryant's son. His name is Anthony Edwards. We found him. Old heads everywhere, rejoice. We found Michael Jordan's grandson and Kobe Bryant's son. His name is Anthony Edwards. And the more I watch this guy, I'm like, ooh, we got him. He plays our style, what we're familiar with. Anthony Edwards is our guy. He's not out here just jacking up threes all the time and step backs. Yeah, he shoots step backs, but that's not all he does. He has a mid-range game. We got him. He's not out here running into dudes, drawing fouls. He's not a foul merchant. We got him. Anthony Edwards is the old head's dream. Like if you're an old head and you were looking for, you know, somebody to a favorite player after Kobe Bryant retired, like Anthony Edwards is your guy, man. The Ant-Man is your guy. Yeah, you see the nasty dunks, the posters. His recent poster against the Jazz is ridiculous. He baptized John the Baptist. Yeah, you saw the nasty block against the Pacers to win that game. Like, this brother goes all out. We got him. Michael Jordan's grandson. His heirness, his royal heirness. We got him. And his name is Anthony Edwards. You see the nasty, you see his flow, man. His game, his dunks, his blocks. We got him, man. And what I'm most interested in, and as I watch Anthony Edwards now in recent game, he has a recent game against Denver that was on TV. I watched, was on national TV against the Nuggets. This brother has been working on his game. What's got me more hyped about him is not the flashy plays. It's not the dunks and the blocks and all this stuff. That stuff draws the casuals. While I love it, the stuff that I see more is him working out of the mid post and the high post. And what I love the most is his footwork. If you see here in this clip here, like against the Nuggets, he did this a couple of times in the game that I don't think I've seen that in his game before. Like, that is a Jordan Kobe special. Like, the turnaround J, you think he's about to go hit the turnaround and he hits you with the fake. Now you can't guard him. Are you gonna guard a turnaround, or are you gonna play him for the fake, the up and under? He's clearly working on his footwork, man. That's what got me the most hype about Anthony Edwards. He's clearly working on his footwork now. Like, he didn't have this move in his package previously like that, not consistently at least. So, old heads, rejoice, man. This is the guy we've been waiting for. He is the prince. I love it, man. I'm in love with this cat now. I love Anthony Edwards' game, man. So, now whenever he has a game, league pass, I'm watching. National TV game, I'm watching. I'm there. Hopefully, the Minnesota Timberwolves can put a team around this cat to actually win a championship. And I'm going to predict this. I'm going to put my money on this cat right now. I'm going to buy low. In the next 3 years, Anthony Edwards is actually going to be the best player in the league. People just aren't going to admit it. He may not have a championship to his name, but in the next 3 years, Anthony Edwards is going to be the best player in the league. There's going to be other cats who put up better stats. The Joker's probably going to have better stats, better shooting percentage, true shooting percentage, more efficient. He might have more assists. He might even have more rings, right? Giannis is probably going to have, I don't know if he's going to have another ring, but he's probably going to have, you know, the stats. But the best player in the league, I predict, in the next 3-4 years is going to be Anthony Edwards. People aren't going to admit it, right? Just like they didn't want to admit that Kobe had taken over the best player in the league. You know, they wanted to give it to, you know, Tim Duncan, you know. Like, we knew Kobe was the best player in the league. Even when Tim Duncan was winning championships, we knew Kobe was that guy. He was the best player in the league. And even still now, people want to rank Tim Duncan higher than Kobe because, you know, they claim Kobe wasn't efficient. That's why the old heads love Anthony Edwards. He doesn't care about efficiency. He cares about doing what it takes to win. He cares about winning. He's old school. His style is old school. I'm just trying to win the basketball game at all costs. Yeah, he can work on his decision-making and some of the shots he takes is still ill-advised. Yeah, he could take care of the ball a little bit. He gets kind of wild and reckless. He'll learn that. Coaching will help him get there. Yeah, his jump shot can get more consistent. He'll work on that. But I'm telling you right now, Anthony Edwards, 3-4 years, he's going to be the best player in the league. There's going to be other cats who are probably winning championships and winning MVPs. because they're on better teams. But Anthony Edwards is going to be the best player in the league. Two-way player, goes hard on offense, goes hard on defense, doesn't mind the matchup. Give me that guy. So even when Hakeem Olajuwon was doing his thing, like, we knew Michael Jordan was that guy. Even when Tim Duncan and other big men were doing their thing, we knew Kobe was that guy, because the NBA has proven us over the last 25, 30 years, the NBA has proven to us that a two-way wing player is probably your best bet to a championship. And that guy, if you have him, he's probably the best player in the league, a la LeBron, a la Kobe, a la Michael Jordan, his heirness. So we found Michael Jordan's grandson, y'all. We found him, finally. Like, watching his footwork the other day, I'm like, damn, this brother is getting there. He's getting it. It's not just about being flashy no more. It's about focusing on the fundamentals. Man, if you're not watching on YouTube, you got to watch this. You got to watch some of this stuff, man. Anthony Edwards does not have this footwork package in previous years. Now, in addition to the highlight plays, which Jordan made, which Kobe made, he's getting his fundamentals down. He's getting his footwork down. A lot of cats don't have footwork. They just dribble, 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 run into you, get a foul call, or throw a step back up. So that's how you become dominant, Ant-Man. Refine your craft, bro. I know he says KD's his favorite player, but you've been watching some Kobe, bro. Don't lie to us. So, yeah, you can have Luka, you can have Joker, you can have Embiid, you can have Giannis. In 3-4 years, the Ant-Man is going to be the best player in the league, championship or not. Just like Michael Jordan was the best player in the league before he even won his first ring in 91. LeBron was the best player in the league before he won his first ring with Miami. It happens like that sometimes. It happens like that sometimes. Ant-Man, 3-4 years, best player in the league. Give me that guy. Two-way player, got the shot, got the handles, got the drive, the desire, plays lockdown defense. Give me that guy. All day, every day, and twice on Sunday. You can take Wemby. Take Wemby. I don't care. I don't care. Give me that guy. Give me Ant-Man. All right, last thing before I get up out of here. Shohei Ohtani, I couldn't let this story slide. I'll probably talk more about it when I learn more. But the Shohei Ohtani thing is crazy. So let me give you the quick rundown of the Shohei Ohtani gambling thing, all right? So Ipay Mizura is Ohtani's friend, all right, an interpreter. He made a bunch of bets using Ohtani's money. Matthew Boyer is another cat in this story. He's an illegal bookie, it turns out. He extended a bunch of millions of dollars of credit to this IP guy. I don't know how to pronounce his name. $4.5 million worth of illegal bets, essentially, from Ohtani's account. Multiple 500K wires sent out from Shohei Ohtani's account. Ipay initially says that Ohtani was with him and they did the transactions together. Ohtani's lawyer says, nah, it wasn't like that. It was theft. Ipay turns around and turns the story and says, Shohei wasn't there. He didn't know nothing about it. Right now, the MLB is still investigating. According to the MLB, Rule 21D3, it says any player, umpire, or club or legal official or employee who places bets with illegal bookmakers or agents for illegal bookmakers shall be subject to such penalty as the commissioner deems appropriate in light of the facts and circumstances of the conduct. Again, more facts to come. That story is going to blow up. I know it is. But as this thing is coming out, right, people are talking about there's no way Shohei Ohtani would do something like that, and they're already there to defend this guy. I'm like, I don't know, man, so I'm going to wait for the facts. But as this story's rolling out this week, one of my guys gave me a book recommendation, The Psychology of Money. And I'm going to talk about The Psychology of Money in upcoming episodes. But The Psychology of Money, one of the paragraphs talks about never enough. And it mentions that one of the hardest financial skills is to get the goalpost to stop moving, meaning you have enough money, but for whatever reason, you keep wanting more. And as a result, you keep having to make more money. So one of the hardest financial skills is you learn you to nail down is to get the goalpost to stop moving. And unfortunately, a lot of athletes don't ever get to that point when they learn to get the goalpost to stop moving, because as they make more money, they want more. So I'm not saying Shohei is guilty, but the financial skill that I want my audience to learn, this is real shit we're talking about now, making money and keeping money, is getting the goalpost to stop moving, meaning as you make money, you don't always need the next thing, the biggest house, the bigger car, the nicer car, the flashier car, more Jordans. And as I'm reading this book and the story's coming out, this chapter on in the psychology of money is called Never Enough. And it gives examples like Bernie Madoff of people who were already wealthy, but for whatever reason, it was never enough and they wanted more. So I'm not saying that Shohei Ohtani is guilty, but it's not out of the realm of possibility that someone who's so rich, who just signed a $700 million contract, could want more. Just like Calvin Ridley, who made millions of dollars in the NFL, would want more and essentially throw a season away gambling silly money. And other NFL players are gambling silly money even though they're making millions of dollars. So again, I'm going to wait for more to come out, but I wanted to share this with you, my followers, if you're new to Sports and the Real Shit. One of the most important skills you can learn, one of the most important financial skills, and the hardest financial skill, is to get the goalpost to stop moving. I'm making enough money. I need to get a house. I need to get a car. That's your goalpost. Then there's another goalpost. So I got to get a bigger house. Why? Because you're trying to keep up with somebody else in a nicer car. So if you could take anything away from this podcast episode, if you could take anything away from this episode, is mastering getting the goalpost to stop moving. Because once you do that, then you'll have the money and the resources to do whatever you want and to live the life you want. But the more you spend on stuff that you don't need, the more the goalposts keep moving, you start making reckless decisions. You start making bad decisions, potentially like a Calvin Ridley or other athletes who have gone broke because the goalposts never stopped moving, even though they were millionaires. So I'm not going to say anything else about Shohei Ohtani. There's more to this story, but I wanted to make sure you guys heard that. While millionaires are spending millions to gamble and losing millions because they're gambling and getting themselves in trouble, there's a lesson there to be learned. And I wanted y'all to hear that in this episode. All right? Remember that. The hardest financial skill is to get the goalpost to stop moving. So I'll talk more when that story comes out. I'm actually planning to do a whole episode on gambling. Y'all don't want to miss that. Sports gambling and how it's impacting folks and how it's, there's a lot going on there. I don't think people recognize the depth and the craziness that's going on with sports gambling. So I'll talk more about that. So I'll leave it there with this Shohei Ohtani stuff. All right, y'all. That's all I have for today. Appreciate y'all as always. Thanks for listening, watching. Don't forget to like, subscribe, share, comment, tell your friends about it. But I'm going to catch you guys next time. Bye. Sports and the Real Shit. Peace. I'm going straight to the top. Just put the sack on the clock. I am Ray Allen's a shot. I'm going straight to the top.